Hello, awesome humans, and welcome to today's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast. I'm Natalie, your host, and I'm so grateful you're here. As a quick reminder, we record this podcast with a live virtual audience, so you will hear me respond to questions and comments. If you'd like to join me for Awesome Human Hour Live, I would love it. It's every Wednesday at noon Eastern, and you can sign up by going to happier.com and clicking on Awesome Human Hour. Now, before we dive into today's topic, just take a moment to arrive to this moment right now. This time is for you, and I hope you find today's episode really valuable. Let's talk about busting through some of these mental blocks that hold us back. And I want to begin the way that I always begin when I give this as a keynote, is I want to tell you something, and I actually don't care that I don't know. I don't know many of you. Some of you, I can see familiar names in chat. So some of you, I do know. But most of you, I don't know. And yet, I am so confident in saying the following. Every single one of you, man, woman, older, younger, whatever your background is, every single one of you as a human being has a gift. We all have capacity to do meaningful things, to have a positive impact in our work, outside of work. We all have something really meaningful to give. That's the awesome part. You are truly an awesome human. You have this awesome capacity, but you're also a human being. And that means that you will mess up. You will fail. You will make mistakes. You will say and do the wrong thing. And it also means that your brain, we're going to talk about it, is going to create some mental blocks that, unless you work through them, are going to get in your way of actually sharing that awesome capacity at work and outside of work. So you are an awesome human. That's why this podcast is called Awesome Human Hour. That is why I talk to you as awesome humans, because each one of you watching and listening has an awesome capacity to contribute and do meaningful work and outside of work, and yet you are human. And I start there because I believe it is our life's work for every single one of us to bring out and embrace that awesome human and share it with the world. And it is work. It is work. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It takes work and effort to remove those mental blocks. And I'm going to share some of the ways for you to do that. And my favorite analogy, and I actually start my book with this, my new book, The Awesome Human Project, Michelangelo, the famous sculptor, used to say or talk about that when he sees a piece of marble, the sculpture is already there. It's already within the piece of marble. And his job as a sculptor is just to chisel away at the excess to reveal the sculpture. That's what I want. That's the visual I want you to have. The awesome human is within you, but you have to do the work. You have to practice these skills we're going to talk about and others. You have to do the work to chisel away at the excess, at the mental blocks, at the negative talk that your brain gives you so that you can bring out that beautiful, awesome human sculpture that is within you. And it is not easy work. I think it is at the same time the most meaningful and worthwhile work. This is what I've dedicated my life and my career to. And this is what I want to talk to you about today. I want to offer you some really tangible ways to begin to do that work, or if you're already doing it, to re-energize it. But I want to start with a question. And here's my question to you. How would you describe your relationship with yourself? And again, if you're watching on Zoom, I always encourage you to put your responses in chat. If you're listening to this, just take a moment and reflect. How would you describe your relationship with yourself? Now, if your answer, when I ask you this question, if you're like, wait, I don't know, I've never thought about it, that's okay. For most of my life, I never thought about this question. It would kind of be a ridiculous question, but I'd actually love for you to reflect on it. And I'm going to share with you, and I want to, in advance, command your courage for everyone who is sharing. Thank you. It's courageous of you to do it openly. But I'm going to tell you that for most of my life, my relationship with myself was a combination of a drill sergeant and the harshest inner critic. So I really was kind of, the way I treated myself was just harshness, just like whatever I did, it was never enough. Always do more, push myself harder. And I also just never did it well enough. My inner critic was never, ever satisfied. And That is what my relationship with myself was for most of my life. I'm going to pause and actually read some of what you've shared for everyone who is listening, because I think it's so enlightening to see all the varieties, right, of your relationships with yourself. So we're always arguing. It's complicated, demanding yet compassionate, tough and being hard, externally positive and internally harsh and insecure, evolving, getting better as I work on myself, a cheerleader, great friends and evolving, a work in progress, very critical, gritting through things, never good enough, right? So thank you again for sharing. And you see there's a variety, but I wanted to start there because I'm going to tell you that your relationship with yourself is at the very core of your ability to embrace your awesome human, to bring your full capacity to do what is most meaningful for you, or to hold you back. And I'm not telling you this because I learned about this in a lab. I'm not telling you this because one day it just dawned on me. I'm only sharing this with you because this is something that I learned the hard way. I'm not going to go into my whole story, but as many of you know, I came to the US as a refugee when I was a teenager. It was a really, really hard experience. And it was so tough that it kind of cemented in me in this two ideas. One, anything meaningful in life had to involve struggle. And two, that the only thing that I could do to succeed, to achieve meaningful things, was to just push myself as hard as I could. And for 20 years, that's what I did. And I thought that I'm just going to tough it out. I'm going to go as fast as I can. I'm going to do as much as I can. I'm going to be so tough and like push myself so much. And then eventually I thought I would achieve enough. I would do enough meaningful things that I could relax and take a breath and enjoy my life and take care of myself. There was like this euphoria that I thought would wait for me. Well, that is not at all what happened. In fact, the opposite happened. And several years ago, I completely burnt out. And when I say that, I don't mean it figuratively. I mean that I stopped being able to function as a mom, as a leader, as a human. And it was the most painful and difficult experience in my life, but within it was a blessing because I learned a life-changing lesson. And this is the lesson that I have then changed my life and my career so I could share with as many human, awesome humans as I can. It isn't by toughing it out, by struggling, by pushing ourselves, by being critical of ourselves that we achieve and create meaningful things and a meaningful life. It is by investing in our emotional fitness, which I define as a skill of creating a more supportive relationship with yourself, your thoughts, your emotions, and other people. It is by investing and practicing the skill of emotional fitness that we give ourselves the capacity, the opportunity, that we fuel ourselves to do what is most meaningful, to bring our best to everything that is meaningful, and to show up the way that I know you all want to show up to your teammates, to your colleagues, to your family, and to your friends. So it's not that pushing yourself and toughing it out and struggling and achieving enough leads to a place where you can then relax and appreciate your life and feel good. It is the opposite. We have to begin by investing in our own emotional fitness to bring out our awesome human. There is no way around it. And my path to learning that was really difficult. It was not straightforward. After I burnt out, I did years and years of research and everything from neuroscience to behavioral economics to Buddhism and yoga to try and figure out, well, how can I do that? And what I created is the method that I know many of you heard me talk about, which we call the Happier Method, which identifies these five science-backed emotional fitness skills. And I want to talk about a few of them today. It's hard to pick. They're all kind of my favorite children. We tell our daughter, Mia, who's an only child, that she's our favorite child. And yeah, it'd be harder to have more kids because how do you pick a favorite when it's your kid? But it's kind of how I feel about my skills. So I want to highlight two, maybe three, we'll see how we do with time, skills for you that you can begin to practice or re-energize your practice to help fuel your emotional fitness, to help improve your relationship with yourself, not just because it feels good, and it does. And I think that is a really good goal, but also because when you do that, you exponentially improve your ability, capacity, potential to do great work, to lead others, to show up as a truly awesome parent, leader, friend, whoever it is that's meaningful to you for other people in your life. And so where I want to begin, I do this often. So if you've been to one of my talks, this might be repeat, and this I can't hear it enough. So I know it's important to repeat. I want to remind you about some of the ways that your brain, your very own brain that is also helping you live and listen to me right now and process food and all that stuff, how your brain gets in the way, how your brain actually causes you more anxiety, more stress, more struggle, and can get in the way of you bringing out that awesome human so you can be at your best. And then we'll talk about a couple of skills that you can practice to shift, to break through, remove those mental blocks. So I'm going to ask this as a question. So I always say, you probably have heard me say this before, but your brain does not care about how you feel at all. Your brain does not care how happy you are, how fulfilled you are. It could care less. What does your brain care about? What is your brain's number one job? So if you're on Zoom, put your answer in chat. If you're listening to this, you can just like write down your answer and then see if you're right. All right. I love the enthusiasm, y'all. Yes. Y'all either are very good students or you know this. This is fantastic. Yes. All correct answers. Your brain's number one job and the only focus is your survival. Your brain only cares about keeping you safe from danger, because if you can't survive, that's it, right? So that's useful, because surviving is fantastic. Living is fantastic, but we're not here to survive, are we? We're here to live. We're here to thrive. And to do that, we have to learn a couple things about our brain and how it gets in the way of that. So the first thing is your brain has what is called the negativity bias. Your brain is very sensitive to anything that is wrong, could go wrong, somebody said wrong about you, anything negative. And the reason is because danger usually has a lot of negativity around it, right? Like I would say, like a pack of wolves is running at you. Your brain notices a lot of negative stimuli, right? To help you keep yourself safe, right? Run away. And it's not just physical danger. Our brain looks for negativity signals. Think about, for example, an example I always give, because it's so like, I can feel that in my own experience. You give a presentation at work. You prepped. It was awesome. You got really great feedback. And one person said something negative. What do you think about when you leave, for the next hour, for the next day? What does your brain keep replaying? The negative comment or the positive feedback? Only the negative comment. Why? Because that negative comment is a sign of psychological danger. Your brain is over-focusing on it. We remember negative things more. We are more anxious about them. We notice negative things more. So again, when it comes to survival and physical danger, it's fantastic. But when it comes to thriving, when it comes to allowing us to see situations clearly, to bring our best, that negativity bias can really get in the way, because in other words, your brain is lying to you all the time. If you don't practice correcting the thoughts that your brain gives you through this negativity lens, you're over-focusing on everything that is wrong and negative and could go wrong, and you're wasting your really limited energy. I hate to break the news, but none of you are superhuman. You all, just like me, we all have a limited amount of emotional, mental, and physical energy. And we have to be conscious about how we're spending it. And wasting your energy ruminating on all the negative things means you don't have that energy to bring to actually solve the problems. You don't have that energy to bring to the other people you're working with. And so allowing your brain's negativity bias to just kind of go on without correcting it gets in the way. It's a mental block of you being able to do what is meaningful to you, of you being able to be at your best. So that's the first thing to be aware of. The second thing to be aware of about your brain, it hates uncertainty, okay? And life is full of uncertainty. I mean, look, we're living through a pandemic. Things are changing all the time, right? At work, things are uncertain all the time. Anytime there is change, anytime that you're doing something that is new or challenging, there's uncertainty. You don't know how it's going to turn out. that's very scary for your brain because it doesn't know how to protect you, right? It has no idea. So what your brain does when things are uncertain is it creates a story, usually a worst case scenario story, because the negativity bias is at work, about the outcome. And so think about how often when something is uncertain, even this pandemic, how often your brain runs away with like, oh my God, this horrible thing is going to happen, right? Or in the work context, think about like maybe you have a presentation coming up that's really high stakes, or you're going for a promotion, or you're applying for a new job. Think about how often your brain will start going through worst case scenarios. Oh my God, I'm going to mess it up. They're going to hate me, right? Like a lot of people reach out to me for advice on public speaking. Apparently public speaking is the number one fear adults have. So maybe you have a presentation that you're really nervous. You're like, oh my God, I'm going to mess it up. They're going to hate me. Think of how often that happens. Again, that drains your energy. It prevents you from showing up with your full cognitive capacities. It prevents you from literally bringing your best to the situation. So the first thing I want you to do is to become aware of when your brain is giving you thoughts that are tainted by its negativity bias, that are tainted by its fear of uncertainty. Start practicing awareness. And once you practice that awareness, it's really powerful because once you are aware, you have a choice. Just because your brain gives you a thought doesn't mean you need to go along with it. You are in charge of your brain, not the other way around. And I realize that for many of you, when I first started to understand this, it was really hard to accept because it feels like my brain is in charge, right? But actually, you are in charge. So just because your brain gives you a thought doesn't mean you need to go along with it. In fact, the first skill I want you to start practicing is being the editor of your thoughts. You are the editor of your thoughts, and you need to begin to practice it. And so when you become aware, again, that awareness itself is a practice. When you become aware of, like, it's a really good thing. Like if you're really anxious about something or you have something really challenging going on at work or outside of work, to actually pause and become aware, are these thoughts causing me to struggle more? Is my brain giving me thoughts that are causing me to stress more? That's a great opportunity to become aware. Then there are two questions I want you to ask to edit your thoughts. First question is this thought true? For something to be true, it needs to have facts to support it. So just to use my presentation, you have an example, you have a presentation coming up and your brain is going, oh my God, I'm gonna mess up. They're gonna hate me, this is gonna suck. Okay, is this thought true? What facts do you have to support it? None. You're talking about a future event, right? So is this thought true is a really powerful question. The second is this thought helpful? And this is perhaps even a more important question. What I mean by that, I want to be very specific with you. Does believing this thought help me bring my best awesome capacity to whatever this challenge is? If I go along with this thought, does it fuel me? Does it make me better? I have never, and I practice this 1,000 times a day, you guys. I have never said yes. Whenever my brain gives me thoughts of like inner doubt or inner criticism, or it's not going to happen, you're not going to make it work, they're not going to like you. Whenever I ask myself, is this thought helpful? Does it help me bring my best? Never have I ever said yes. Believing that I'm going to mess it up, thinking that these people are not going to like me, that helps me. That makes me better. Never. And so two questions to edit your thoughts. Is this thought true? And is this thought helpful? And I cannot tell you how powerful that is. Just yesterday, I got an email. It's actually a woman leader who was in our second Elevating Women Leaders program, so graduated earlier this year. And she sent me an email to tell me about a really stressful situation. A confrontation is the word she used that she was in at work with another colleague. And it was really, really stressful. Reading about it was stressful. And she said that she had all these thoughts of like how this colleague is out to get her. And she paused before their like meeting. And she said, I practiced. I was like, is this thought true? And she was like, I could find a lot of answers to that question that showed like my colleague was really confrontational and really angry, but I had no fact to support that she was doing it to get me. She said, but more importantly, when I asked myself, does believing this help me? She said it just like brought her this clarity of no, believing that this person is out to get me is not going to help me resolve this. It's actually causing me a ton of stress. And she went into this meeting having edited her thoughts and they had a really open conversations. And I don't want to share too many details because anything anyone shares with me is always private. It turned out there was a huge misunderstanding that was driving most of this. And her colleague was really struggling with something at home. And they were able to connect and resolve it and avoid wasting so much energy. So editing your thoughts, being aware, right, that my negativity bias is at work. My brain is just really afraid. There's a lot of uncertainty I'm facing. And that's what these thoughts are driven by. And then practicing editing your thoughts is incredibly powerful. It doesn't just help you preserve your energy. It doesn't just help you feel better, which I think is a really good goal, but it actually helps you to see situations more clearly, to make better decisions. And that is non-negotiable. Whether you are a woman leader, a man leader, or just a human being, that is non-negotiable. If you want to do what is meaningful, if you want to bring out your awesome capacity, if you want to solve problems, and practicing this in the moment is so powerful. It doesn't take a long time. It does take your awareness, which is why I keep coming back to it. Because once you are aware, you have choices. And then making the choice to not just go along with what your brain is telling you. And it's going to be really convincing, okay? Because your brain is a small child who is afraid. That is the analogy I want you to think about. That's what I write about in my new book. Is I have a whole chapter on this of learning to talk back to your brain, but doing it with an understanding that it is a small child who is afraid. So you want to acknowledge your thoughts. You want to acknowledge your feelings, but then you want to reason. You want to edit. You don't just want to go along with it. And I cannot tell you how powerful this practice is in the moment. And the thing I want to tell you is these are choices we make in as part of our daily lives. Like this talk I just gave to this team, somebody asked me a question in my own journey of healing from burnout, of learning to live and work in a different way. What have been some of the, like the biggest like aha moments? One of them was that I have a choice moment by moment. And it's these small shifts that you make in how you approach your thoughts, how you approach your feelings, editing your thoughts. Those are the really powerful shifts. And it's hard for me to, I hope you feel kind of the conviction through the screen, but the proof is in the doing. So the best way for you to test out whether it's actually as powerful as I am telling you it is to practice it, is to put this into action. So this is your first practice. When you become, again, it's two parts. First, become aware. I call this struggle awareness. Become aware when your brain is causing you to struggle with its thoughts. Become aware. And then practice editing your thoughts using these two questions. Ask yourself, is this thought true? And is this thought helpful? And if you say it's not helpful, what would be more helpful? What would be more helpful to help you to actually for you to go through whatever that challenging situation is? So that's the first skill. I want to actually talk about, we had a bunch of people join us a little bit later. I will take your questions. So if you have questions, you can put them into Q&A at the bottom of your screen. That's the best place. Or you can put them in chat, but I will make sure to leave time for questions. So I want to like take a few minutes and talk about applying these editing your thoughts skill and steps to self-critical thoughts, to thoughts that we all have, some of us more than others, of self-criticism, of judging ourselves. I want to kind of zoom in and talk about how we do that. And the way we do that is by practicing self-compassion. In fact, I'm going to go out on a big limb. I don't think I've said this out loud before, but this is, and I right now I am speaking to you women leaders, you women at work directly. I'm not saying this is not relevant for men, but in my experience, this is a tougher area for women. So as much as I can look you in the eye through this little thing in my display. This is imagine me sitting across from you. And I say this without an ounce of doubt, learning to treat myself with compassion, I'm going to explain what that means, is the single most life-changing difference that I have made from pre-burnout Natalie to Natalie who can do hard things. And my life is full of hard things, just like your life is full of hard things. It's not like life becomes a blissful, easy thing, but it is the single biggest investment and gift that not only I made in myself so that my experience of my work and life is better, but it has unleashed more creativity. It has unleashed more of my ability to do what is helpful to all of you. It is put like, there was this, all of this hidden resources and potential that I had that were kept away by my endless self-criticism. And so this is my pep talk of making self-compassion a priority. So let's talk about that and how it's related to self-criticism and editing your thoughts. First of all, a definition. What is self-compassion? You guys want to try? I like this audience. You're very interactive. How would you define self-compassion? Put it in chat. And before I tell you the definition, I'm going to tell you what I used to think and what I know a lot of people think for no fault of their own. Just I was ignorant. I used to think that self-compassion means that I just kind of tell myself that I'm perfect all the time and that I'm just amazing how I am. And I never improve. And I never like noticing anything about myself that isn't like as I'd like it to be. And I let myself off the hook. That's what I thought self-compassion was. And I know I'm not alone because so many people, and again, particularly women leaders tell me they are afraid to open up to self-compassion because they are afraid it's going to make them weak. It's going to make them not improve. It's going to get in the way of them growing into the awesome human they want to be. All right. So now I told you what self-compassion is not. I love it. We have so many correct answers. I'm going to read a couple. Giving yourself a break, being kind to yourself, speaking to yourself as a good friend, being kind to yourself like you would to a friend. Let's see. I love how many of you are sharing. Accepting yourself as you are in this moment, treating yourself like you were talking to a friend. You guys got it. Self-compassion, the shorthand for self-compassion, is treating yourself like you would a friend. But I'm going to break it down for you. Self-compassion has several components, and it's really, really helpful. It was really helpful for me to really dig in and understand them. First, it means you recognize that you are a human being. Again, that means you cannot always get things right. You cannot always be perfect. You cannot ever avoid making mistakes. It also means, you know, you need to rest. You need to take breaks. You can't just go, go, go. So the first part of self-compassion is acknowledging that you're a human being. It seems like, oh, that's obvious. No, it's not. No, it's not. I know in myself, and I know in so many of you without having to like even meet you, that you get to this place where if your friend is tired, you tell your friend to rest. If your friend had a bad day, you tell them to take a break. And if you're tired, you tell yourself to, no, don't be such a wuss. Do more. Work harder. How many of you do that? I used to do that. Okay. So the first and foremost is recognizing that you are a human being. The second is the intention to treat yourself in a way that reduces struggle and suffering. It takes energy to beat yourself up. If you're using energy to beat yourself, you're wasting that energy. You cannot use that energy to actually improve whatever the thing is you're criticizing yourself. If you're causing yourself suffering with your harsh self-talk, believe me, you are not more motivated to improve. And, you know, this is something that is so important for me to say. I, for many years, my mom still believes this. I just had a conversation with her about this. And I know this is true for many people. I used to believe that my endless self-criticism is how I'm going to improve. Okay. So I just thought the more I criticize myself, the more I'm likely to improve. Anyone here think that you're criticizing yourself is what drives you to self-improvement? I hear this all the time from women, from men. I hear this all the time. So I want to end that. I want to bust through that once and for all. Okay. Because do you know how many research studies show that endless self-criticism helps you improve? Any guesses? Any guesses? How many studies show that endless self-criticism motivates you to improve? Anyone? Oh, fantastic. Zero. Great. In capital letters. Thank you. Zero. Not one, not 10. Zero studies show that endless self-criticism helps you improve. Do you know what does help you improve? You know what hundreds and hundreds of studies show does help you improve? Any guesses? Self-compassion. It turns out that when you make a mistake or you want to improve in something, like there's something in you that you're not happy with, outside, inside, whatever, that when you treat yourself with self-compassion, again, you treat yourself like you would a friend, you support yourself, you don't berate yourself, you don't cause yourself unnecessary struggle. Studies show you actually work harder and you're more motivated to improve. Studies also show you're more resilient through setbacks. So it is not self-criticism that helps you improve. It is self-compassion that does. And the thing is, you all know that already, okay? Because this is how we treat our friends, right? If your friend comes and your friend says, you know, I didn't do great on that presentation at work. I don't know. I think I suck at my job. What would you say to your friend? Yes, you are right. You are pathetic at your job. You suck. I think you should quit. No, you would never say that. We say that to ourselves. You would never say that. You would say something like, listen, it was just one presentation. Okay. You didn't do as great as you wanted. It happens. Don't beat yourself up. And you probably say something like, think about how you can prepare better next time. Boom. That is what you would say to a friend that you care about. So that is at the core of self-improvement and growth and bringing out your awesome capacity to contribute and do good and all of the meaningful things that you want to do. Your self-compassion. And so how do you use the skill of editing your thoughts when it comes to self? How do you layer that onto your self-critical thoughts? Here you go. When, again, awareness, first step. It takes the practice of awareness to become aware when you are criticizing yourself. And by the way, acknowledging that there is something you want to improve is different from criticizing yourself. Okay, and I'm going to give you a practice to do this. But again, self-compassion doesn't mean that you're like, oh yeah, I'm perfect. Nothing to improve. No. In fact, self-compassion asks you to courageously see yourself and acknowledge flaws, things you need to do better, things you want to improve. A core of self-compassion is self-acceptance. But self-acceptance is not the end, it's the beginning. What I mean by that is when you accept yourself as you are, it just means you acknowledge yourself as you are right now. And that's the beginning for you to say, here's how I am right now. And you say that without judgment. You just acknowledge, accept, like, You accept yourself as you are, but that is not the end. That is the beginning. From there, you can say, okay, what do I want to do to improve? But you do that in a supportive way, in a loving way, just like you would a friend. And so I want to give you a practice that is, I invented it for myself when I was just learning about this on my own journey. It is still a practice I teach. It is still a practice I practice. So I call this 3 steps to talking to yourself as you would a friend. So the first step is acknowledge. And it brings in the awareness we talked about just now, right? You have to become aware of when your brain is being overly critical, when you're beating yourself up, when you're not treating yourself as you would a friend. So acknowledge the situation, acknowledge, I didn't do as well in that presentation. I'd love to lose a couple pounds. I'm not in a place in my career where I'd like to be. Acknowledge. But acknowledge means you just witness, you just focus on how things are. Do it with self-acceptance, do it with love, do it with care, without judgment. Acknowledge. Step 2 is support. Say something supportive to yourself, just like you would to a friend, right? What you say is up to you. Just literally imagine as you do this practice that you're talking to a good friend, what would you say to a friend in that situation? And step 3, move forward. So acknowledge, support, move forward. Move forward. Identify one thing that you could do to improve. One thing you can learn from whatever is going on to help you improve, to move forward. And in doing that, you're shifting your brain's attention away from, I suck at this, the criticism, the judgment, to, okay, let's do this. acknowledge, support, move forward. I cannot tell you how powerful this practice is. I cannot tell you how much of your capacity it unlocks and how much it actually helps you improve, but you do it from a place of self-acceptance and love versus from a place of fear, of exhaustion and struggle. And you know the answer. One fuels you to be better and do all the awesome things you want to do, and the other one gets in the way. So those are my two skills for you: editing your thoughts, becoming aware of when your brain's negativity bias, fear is driving your thoughts and editing your thoughts. And second, practicing self-compassion, especially to remove those mental blocks that overly harsh self-criticism puts in your way. And I know we have some questions. I'm excited. I'd love to take your questions, but I want to just in closing tell you that I hope this is not just motivating and energizing. If you've been with me for a while, you know that I always tell you that if I've motivated you, if I've inspired you, that's great, but I don't care. The only thing I care about is that you take these things and you practice them, because that is when you will feel the benefit. That is how you unlock that awesome human within yourself. So please practice, 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 practice. Did I say practice? Practice. Did I mention I want you to practice? Practice. But if in the coming weeks, like you're energized right now, but in the coming weeks, like your brain, you know, does its thing, like, yeah, I know she said that, but whatever. But no, I really, really suck. Like, I really want to fester in my self-criticism. I want to give you one more incentive to make these practices core to your daily ritual, especially self-compassion. And here it is. The way you treat others is rooted in the way that you treat yourself. There's no way around it. When I became more self-compassionate towards myself, I became more compassionate as a mom, as a leader, as a team member, as a human being. And I know you all would not be at something, listening to something called the Awesome Human Podcast, if you didn't care about showing up as a compassionate human being at work and outside of work. To do that, you cannot skip the first step, and that is practicing compassion towards yourself. So your practice of editing your thoughts, your practice of self-compassion is not just a benefit to you. It is an act of service to every single awesome human that you interact with. That's my pep talk for the week. All right, I'm going to take some questions. I left some time. Very proud of myself, because obviously I could talk about this all day long. And just as like my last like pitch, this is the kind of stuff we do in Elevating Women Leaders, but in a lot more depth. And we get to talk about your specific challenges, and I do office hours, and you can work with me via email individually. And you have this amazing group of women who are there to mentor you, to support you, to keep you accountable in between. This is the kind of work you get to do. I can't imagine more important and impactful work. So that's my additional pitch. If you're a woman leader, check out Elevating Women Leaders. Spots will fill up. Go talk to your boss about it. Okay. Go talk to your boss about it. Go talk to your team members about it. Get a bunch of you to do this program. It'll fundamentally shift not just how you feel, but how you work, how you live, and it'll take you from surviving to thriving, which is what happened to me. All right. Now I'm really going to shut up. Debbie, let's take some questions.
Okay, great. So, I think this is the perfect one to tag on to what you just were talking about with Elevating Women Leaders. There's a question from Emily about, in your work with executives, which of the five skills have you seen make the most difference? I love this question.
Oh, I love this question. Oh, it's a hard question. Okay. All right. I'm going to say two, because, you know, it's my show, so I get to like not answer the question. I know you said one, Emily. I'm going to give two. Self-compassion, without a doubt. Men and women, without a doubt. And acceptance. And acceptance is a skill that takes into account the editing your thoughts practice, but acceptance is a skill of learning how to see yourself and the situation in front of you with clarity instead of judgment, and then using that as your foundation to determine the best way to move forward. Part of that is self-compassion. Part of that is clarity. Part of that is editing your thoughts. So without a doubt, acceptance and self-compassion. Great question.
Okay. So Natalie, this question from Britta, what is the difference between being self-critical and being self-aware? you can identify not so nice things about yourself. Is that being self-critical?
It's a great question. Here's the thing, and awareness is about acknowledgement, right? So I talked about it, right? Like, self-compassion doesn't ask that you ignore that there's areas of you that you want to improve or there's something you're sucking at. Like, awareness is really important. And that's why I begin everything with awareness. But awareness is different from criticism, right? Because awareness just shows you how things are. Criticism makes you feel like crap for how things are. And when you feel like crap, when you are deflated, you're not going to bring your best to improving. You absolutely not. And so self-awareness is absolutely essential. I talk about it nonstop. It's at the beginning of every skill I offer you. But self-awareness just means you are aware. That's what I said. Self-compassion asks you to courageously acknowledge places you want to improve, ways you want to be better. That's acknowledgement. That's awareness. But endless self-criticism is judging. It is making yourself feel like crap for having those areas, and that does not motivate you. So self-awareness is essential. Self-criticism is a waste of your attention and energy.
Okay, so I'm going to combine a couple of questions. The first is, why is it that sometimes we feel comfort in our not so productive feelings?
Yeah.
And the other one I want to tag on to that is, do you have a mantra like, ask yourself, how much do others really care, or they are really thinking about themselves, to help you when you're overthinking that someone else is judging you and you're being self-critical?
Yeah, great question. So, why do we find comfort in those thoughts? So think about what I said to you about the brain. The brain just wants to find danger. So it is very comfortable coming up with all kinds of danger scenarios, and including psychological danger. So that's why it's so comforting. Your brain creates all these negative stories. We love stories, by the way, as human beings, we love stories. So check mark on stories, but also it's like, that's how your brain thinks it's like controlling for your safety, is all these negative danger seeking thoughts. So it's very comfortable, right? Because it's like, oh, it's doing its thing. It's looking out for danger. Again, that's actually a good opportunity to say comfort does not mean beneficial. Some things that are comfortable are not beneficial. And in terms of a mantra, you know what I, you know, so I'll tell you two things. I'll tell you what I say to my daughter, Mia. You know, a teenage girl, there's a lot of self-awareness is coming online, and there's a lot of like self-judgment and perceived judgment. And two things that I've been saying to her for a while now. So I just share those. They're good for me to hear too. The first is, I think Debbie mentioned that, or maybe you mentioned that in your question, whoever asked this, but reminding ourselves that mostly what people think about, what we say to others, is driven by our perception of ourselves. We're much more into kind of thinking about ourselves than like others. So I do remind her about that. I'm like, you know, like, people are like not sitting out there waiting to judge you. So that's the first thing. But the second thing that I remind her about is, three things, I guess. The second is this perceived judgment, that often we perceive judgment because our brain is doing that thing that I talked to you about, right? The negativity bias is in full effect because interacting with other people is uncertain. We don't know how people will react. So our brain is creating perceived negative judgment. Right? So becoming aware of that, like, that is not rooted in reality. So I don't need to go along with it. And finally, one of the things that I say to myself and to her a lot is, the only things we can control in life is within ourselves. The job of evaluating other people's opinions or judging us, that is not our job. So focusing on that, that's not your job. And so those are three things that I say to her. Those are three things I remind myself of that I think are really helpful. It's a recognition, I guess, of all of our humanity, right? And so, you know, just to like use my presentation example again that I've been using this whole time, you know, you're going in to give a presentation and your brain is like, oh my God, they're going to hate me. They're not going to like it. Or not. Actually, the people sitting in that room are not sitting there going, okay, let me think about Natalie's presentation. Let me think about how Natalie might mess up. No one does that. Do you ever do that when you're sitting and listening to a presentation? When you came to this awesome human hour, were you like, all right, let me see how Natalie is going to mess this up? No, we don't do that. First of all, you all came in with your own stuff. You all came in worrying about all your own stuff, just like I worry about my own stuff. We all focus on our own stuff. But the other thing, we're not out there rooting for the other person to mess up. And it's really, really important to remember. So I think it's a good pep talk to end with, because we're at time. Again, you guys know I could just talk about this forever. So for all of you on Zoom, Debbie just put a bunch of really useful links in chat. Remember that the Awesome Human Hour is also the Awesome Human Podcast. You can listen. We have 20 episodes out at this point. You can find it on your favorite podcasting platform. You can listen on a go. And the thing I ask is if you find this valuable, please rate it. Please leave a review. The algorithms help other people find them. Elevating Women Leaders applications are open. I hope to see many of you there. And we always share a recording if you signed up on Zoom. If you're listening to this as a podcast and you'd like to attend live on Zoom so you can interact with me as part of our audience, you can just go to happier.com and click on Awesome Human Hour. Thank you all for being here. I always say thank you for being, and thank you for being here, and thank you for being part of our awesome and growing awesome human community. And most importantly, thank you for being open to hearing, to learning, and to practicing. That is what really, really matters. I wish you all a wonderful rest of your week, and I will see you next Wednesday, as always. Thank you, everyone. Bye, Debbie. Bye, everyone. All right, awesome humans. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast, and I would love to know what resonated. What questions do you have? What are you excited to practice? So send us an email to team@happier.com, and please rest assured, if you send an email that you'd love for me to read, I will always get it in my inbox. My team will send it to me. Let's stay in touch so you can keep practicing skills to help you struggle less and thrive more in work and life. The best way to do it is to go to happier.com and subscribe to my weekly newsletter. I promise you, I would never send you spam. It's just more practices, skills, and stories to help you embrace your inner awesome human. I can't wait to see you next week.